So you're going to hear this again. This retreat is going to be not only a loving kindness retreat, but it's a Brahma Vihara retreat. That means it includes compassion, loving kindness, joy, and equanimity. This does lead to Nibbana. So, when you practice loving kindness meditation, you start by sending loving and kind thoughts to yourself. Now, if you've already done a retreat with me, I don't want you to start here. If you've gotten into the Arupa Jhanas, then you do loving kindness to the six directions. But for people that are just starting, I'm going to give the instructions in that. So you spend about 10 minutes sending loving and kind thoughts to your spiritual friend, or to yourself, excuse me. Loving kindness is a soft, warm, glowing feeling in the center of your chest. When that feeling arises, then you make a wish for your own happiness. You have to feel the wish. This is a feeling meditation, it's not an intellectual meditation. Okay? So you want to feel the wish that you make, if you wish happiness. Don't be moving like that. You want to bring up a feeling of joy. Feel the joy. Put the joy in your heart. Radiate that feeling to yourself. If you make a wish for being happy, then feel the happy feeling. Put that in your heart, radiate that to yourself. If you have a restless mind, then you need to bring up a feeling of peace and calm. And feel that peace and calm. Put that feeling in your heart and radiate that to yourself. After 10 minutes, then you start sending loving and kind thoughts to your spiritual friend. A spiritual friend is a person of the same sex, and they're alive. That's the qualification. A spiritual friend is someone, when you think of them and their good qualities, you truly like them. You wish them well. So you stay with your spiritual friend for the rest of the sitting. Sit no less than 30 minutes. If your meditation is good, sit longer. As long as the meditation is good, stay with the meditation. Sit with your back nicely straight, your shoulders back a little bit, and don't move. You can move as much as this table moves, which says don't move. Don't wiggle your toes, don't wiggle your fingers, don't scratch, don't rub, don't change your posture. If you feel like sitting for 45 minutes, then sit 45 minutes. But you don't try to... This is not a bell retreat. We're not going to have bells except for breakfast and lunch and the afternoon tea. So you're going to be sitting and walking on your own schedules. When you're doing your walking meditation, I want you to stay with your spiritual friend. Walk no less than 15 minutes. Now, something that some people get in the habit of is they'll be sitting and then they want to change your posture and then continue sitting. Don't do that. Get up and start walking. Walking is a very important part of the meditation. Too many people have the idea that walking doesn't mean much. When you do the walking, I don't want you walking slowly. I want you to walk at a normal pace. You're walking for exercise and to develop the habit of carrying loving kindness with you when you're walking in your daily life. So it's important to develop this skill. If your walking is good and you can stay with your spiritual friend very well, then walk longer. That's okay. You can walk up to 45 minutes. If you walk more than 45 minutes, you have a tendency to get a little tired, and you don't need to do that. When you get to certain places in your meditation, I might tell you to start walking faster, because I want you to get your circulation going more. If you sit for 2 or 3 hours, your blood starts to settle down into your legs, so you need to walk faster so that you get your circulation going. And this helps your meditation more than a little bit. The meditation is an all-the-time meditation. It is not just sitting and not just walking. Don't let yourself space out and think about this and think about that. You're not meditating when you do that. You need to stay with your spiritual friend or your object of meditation for as long as you can. Your mind is going to wander. Wandering mind is not the enemy. Wandering mind just means your mind is thinking about something. As soon as you recognize that your mind is thinking about something other than your object of meditation, then you use the 6 R's. The 6 R's is another way of describing right effort. In the suttas, it talks about 4 steps of the six of right effort. I put in a couple extra steps just to help you remind you. You recognize when your mind is distracted. That means it's not staying on your object of meditation. You release the distraction. You don't keep thinking it. And relax the tightness caused by that distraction. This is very important. Your brain has 2 parts to it, basically. And there's a membrane that goes around each part of the brain. It's called the meninges. It's like a bag that holds your brain together. And Every time you have a thought, every time you have a feeling arise or a sensation arises, it causes your brain to expand against the meninges. And that causes a subtle tightness in your head and in your mind. So the relaxed step is very important because this is how you recognize what craving is. Okay, craving is the I like it or I don't like it mind. Craving is the cause of suffering. Now, you're made up of five different things. You have a physical body. You have feeling. Feeling is not emotion. Feeling is feeling. It's either pleasant feeling, painful feeling, neutral feeling. You have perception. Perception is a part of the mind that names things. You see this and you say, oh, this is a fan. Perception is a part of the mind that put that name on this. It's the start of concepts. When we're thinking, we think in concepts. You have thoughts and you have consciousness. When a feeling arises, right after that feeling, that's where there's tension and tightness. You have to be able to recognize this subtle tightness and relax. And when you relax, it'll feel like there's expansion happening in your mind. And right after that, you will notice that there is no more thoughts. Your mind is alert, your mind is very bright, and your mind is pure. Why is it pure? Because you no longer have craving in your mind. You bring that pure mind to something that's wholesome. What's wholesome? Smile. This is a smiling meditation. When you have a smile in your mind is light, your mind is very alert. And it's easy to recognize when it starts to get tight, and that means you have some craving in your mind at that time. Right after craving arises, there is clinging. Clinging is all of your thoughts, your opinions, your ideas, and belief that all of your thoughts and opinions are yours. Personally, when you relax that tightness, you don't have that clinging arise. When you smile, you bring that smiling, light mind back to your object of meditation. Your object of meditation, the feeling of loving kindness, making a wish, feeling the wish, putting that in your heart, taking your spiritual friend, putting them right in the middle of your heart, and radiating that feeling to them. And the last part of right effort is to stay with your object of meditation for as long as you can. Now, if you've done meditation before, almost all of the teachers that I know of, when they teach a different kind of meditation than this, they try to tell you, you need to try harder, you need to push, you need to put in more energy, more effort. And that's exactly the opposite of what needs to happen. When you put in more effort, you start to have more restlessness in your mind. And you get caught by the hindrances very easily. Hindrances are not your enemy to fight with. Hindrances are your teachers. They're teaching you where your attachment is. What is attachment? I am that. I am this thought. I am this memory. It's taking it personally. When you take things personally, you cause yourself a lot of suffering. After the story about your mind going off on a hindrance, then you get emotional tendencies. And they're habitual. And this is where people get really caught up in fear and anxiety and dislike and lust for something. Thinking about a food and your mouth starts watering, that's lust. Not only, quote, sexual, but it's a wanting mind. When you use the six R's correctly, you won't have this emotional state arise. Okay? When you forget to use the six R's, that's when emotional states arise. And that's a cause of suffering. That's a cause of immeasurable problems. Because you're taking all of this stuff personally. When you let go of craving, you are not taking anything personally anymore. You're seeing the true impersonal nature of everything. Every thought, every feeling, every sensation is part of an impersonal process. It happens because the conditions are right for it to arise. What you do with what arises in the present moment dictates what happens in the future. If you don't use the six R's and you get caught up in your craving, and you try to think the feeling away, you're going to get into your emotional upsetness. You're going to get into this mind that gets caught up in dislike, in fear, in anxiety, all of these things. And you're going to suffer. When you use the six R's, and you recognize that your mind is distracted, and you release the distraction, you don't keep your attention on it anymore, and then relax, your mind is pure. Right after that, you have to bring up something wholesome. What's wholesome? Smiling. Why? Because it keeps your mind light, keeps your mind alert. And bring that wholesome mind back to your object of meditation, which is wholesome also. And stay with that wholesome mind for as long as you can. Stay with your spiritual friend for as long as you can. One thing that seems to happen occasionally for people is they have a hindrance arise and they don't really like it very much, but they're staying with their object of meditation and these thoughts come through. And they have the idea that you're supposed to 6R every thought that comes through. No, that's not right. You only use the 6Rs when your mind gets distracted away from your object of meditation. If you're staying with your object of meditation and thoughts come through, ignore them. They will fade away by themselves. Only when your mind is distracted, then you use the six R's and come back to your object of meditation. It doesn't matter how many times your mind gets distracted. What matters is what you do with that when your mind is distracted. And what you do with all distractions is use the six R's. Now, the six R's are really, really important. They will take you all the way to the end of the line. They will take you to arahatship. So get real familiar with the six R's. I know that there's a lot of people that write books and they try to tell you what meditation is. Right now, there's so many different definitions of what mindfulness is that it's shocking. I saw a conference on mindfulness and none of the people talked about what it was. And they haven't got a clear idea. So I'm going to give you a definition of mindfulness, and it works 100% of the time. Mindfulness is remembering to observe how mind's attention moves from one thing to another. Now, this takes it out of the realm of psychology, because psychology is about why does this stuff happen? Why does it come up? When you start observing how mind's attention moves, you start teaching yourself how this process actually does work. And you're going to hear me mention this a lot. And you're going to hear me mention the six R's a lot. Why? Because after you hear it 100 or 200 times, you're actually going to understand it. I've had people come to me and say, you know, I just let go and relaxed and my mind was clear. And I go, yeah, so? How many times have you heard me say this before you actually experienced it? This is the difference between reality, how things actually work, and philosophy, thinking about how things actually work. You need to have the experience. See, every time you use that relaxed step, your mind is clear. You don't have distractions. You don't have emotional states coming up. When you let go of craving, clinging won't arise. If clinging won't arise, habitual tendencies won't arise. If habitual tendencies don't arise, birth of action doesn't arise. When birth of action doesn't arise, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair don't arise. There's no more suffering for that moment. Now, you heard me start to talk a little bit about Nibbana. There's two kinds of Nibbana. There's a mundane Nibbana. Every time you use the six R's and relax that tension and tightness in your mind and in your body, because when you relax, the meninges is not only a bag around your brain, it's a bag around your entire spine. And when you relax, you're relaxing your entire body at that time. And at first you won't notice it so much, but as you practice it more and more, you start to see that, yeah, it feels real comfortable. You're going to be going through different stages of understanding. When you read other books, they make a big deal out of attaining a jhana. And jhana, oh, but you can't attain nibbana if you only practice jhana practice. You have to practice vipassana. Well, I'm teaching you how to practice jhana and vipassana at the same time. This is the way the Buddha teaches it. This is the way that works. As I said, there's a lot of different people writing a lot of different books, and they're trying to say this is the Buddhist teaching, but they'd never go to the actual teaching of the Buddha and read and see what the Buddha said. What they're doing is they're using what their teacher taught them, and their teacher didn't take the time to go to the suttas because they're teaching what their teacher taught them. And that's how this tradition gets kind of confusing. I have a friend that's been teaching meditation for 50 years, teaching it. When he gets up in front of a crowd like this, you can hear his fear in his voice. And I saw him give a talk to a large group of psychotherapists and psychologists in New York City. And he admitted that ever since he started practicing, and he started back in the 60s, that he's always had trouble with fear, and it always comes up. And my question is that the actual teaching of the Buddha, or is it a teaching from a commentary, which is somebody's opinion of what they think the Buddha taught, which doesn't necessarily agree with what the Buddha taught? You will see for yourself, as you start hearing the Dhamma talks, that I read the sutta to you. So you're going to know what the Buddha said. Of course, it's through a translation, and there are some translations that aren't as good as others, and I change words around occasionally, because it's easier to understand with what I'm saying. For example, in Pali, they talk about the first jhana, they say you have vitaka and vichara. Now that's always translated as initial application of mind and sustained application of mind. Well, I don't use those words. What does that mean? I say it's thinking and examining. Now you understand more what it's talking about. So I have words that I'm going to be changing from the translation that to me make more sense. The whole thing with practicing loving kindness meditation is being able to carry it with you no matter what you're doing. Every time you sit, when you're just starting out, you start sending loving and kind thoughts to yourself for the first 10 minutes. All of the rest of the time, I don't care what you're doing, whether you're taking a shower, whether you're eating, whether you're going to the toilet, whether you're just going out for a walk, stay with your spiritual friend. Radiate that feeling to your spiritual friend. I wrote a book called Life is Meditation, Meditation is Life, because I used that title specifically because when I started meditating, I was taught that the only time you meditate is when you're sitting. And that comes from what happened with meditation when it first came to this country. It was brought by the Japanese and the Chinese. And to them, that's what meditation was. And people have this idea that meditation is sitting. Well, meditation is more than sitting. Meditation is walking. Meditation is being able to recognize when your mind has a hindrance in it. Do you have hindrances arise in your daily activity? Maybe? Yeah? Well, what are you going to do with that? Use the six R's. Let it be. Relax, smile, radiate some loving kindness. See, right now there's being two different kinds of meditation that are being taught. And both kinds have real advantages for doing that. But what is the end result of your meditation? That's the real key. What I'm going to show you through the Buddha's teaching is that the end result is letting go of those emotional states, not getting so caught up in them, having more balance in your mind, letting go of so many distracting kinds of thought. Now, every time you use the six R's, you're experiencing Nibbana. Why? Because Nibbana has a definite meaning to it. Ni means no, and bana means fire. In the suttas, it very much talks about craving as being fire. But every time you use the six R's, there is no fire. Your mind has balance in it. Doesn't get hot. Gets cool. So being cool is part of the definition of Nibbana. And then there is the supermundane Nibbana. The supermundane Nibbana is, you can call it unworldly coolness, where there's real personality change. You experience never having any more doubt that this is the right path. Letting go of the belief of doing rites and rituals to gain spiritual advantage. And you see that everything is part of an impersonal process. Now, when you have this experience, it's world-changing. It changes the way you see the world. Things are more bright, they're more clear, you have more joy in your life. You won't break any more precepts. And the precepts are very necessary part of the practice. That's why I'm having you recite the precepts every morning, not as some kind of rite and ritual, but as a reminder, that's what I have to do. I don't want to kill any living beings on purpose. I'm not going to steal anything. I'm not going to have any sexual activity. I'm not going to say anything that's not true. I'm not going to take any drugs or alcohol. This doesn't mean medicine. It means taking these things so that it takes the edge off. So you won't break a precept anymore. So you become more and more wholesome. More and more, you start having more fun in life. Because you know the right path. You know the path to walk. You don't need to experiment anymore. You know what you're doing. And you are teaching yourself this. I'm not your teacher. I never was a teacher. I'm a guide. And I'm a translator. I translate what you say to see if it's matching what the Buddha is talking about. So sometimes it gets tricky. But as you go deeper and deeper in the meditation, you're teaching yourself how to let go of the suffering. You're teaching yourself how to relax into things and experience nibbana, a coolness. Your mind will have more and more a sense of balance in it. It doesn't mean that occasionally you won't get angry at something, but it lasts for a lot less time. You don't hold a grudge for years. You let go of it fairly quickly because you see that you're causing yourself the suffering, and you start letting it go. So this particular practice is going to be different than anything you've done before, unless you've been to another retreat that I've taught. I've ran across somebody in Florida that had been doing meditation since 1972. Been doing the same meditation, straight Vipassana. And he wasn't very successful with his practice, and he did meditations two or three times a year, a month, 3 months. He did a lot of internal work, but he wasn't satisfied with the end result. When you get done with this 10-day retreat, if you follow the directions the way that I give them, you don't add anything, you don't subtract anything. If you follow the directions that I give you, by the time you're done with this retreat, you will see things differently. You will have a more uplifted mind. You will have more balance in your mind. And I'm used to having people have fast progress. That's why I only give a 10-day retreat. I don't have to give, I wouldn't know what to do with you if you came for a 1 month retreat. After 10 days, you don't need any more. You already understand what you're doing. and you can carry on your own. This practice is truly amazing. And it's not my practice, it's the Buddha's practice. Your understanding is going to grow very fast because you're going to be able to see for yourself how it works. Now, I'm going to insist that everybody smile. Well, the Buddha didn't teach us to smile. He doesn't mention it at all in the suttas. Yes, he does. In the Dhammapada, he says, we're the happy ones. What's the expression of being happy? Smiling and laughing, right? You go to a Buddhist country, they're smiling and happy all the time. They're accepting. You go to Thailand, they have an expression, Mai Pen Rai, it doesn't matter. Oh, I did this or I said this, never mind. So you develop a never mind mind that's not attached. What does attached mean? I'm taking it personally. I don't like what you said, and you're my enemy now. I hate you. I. They don't have that problem there. They have their own problems, but it's all cultural stuff. But there is a deep understanding in Buddhist countries about letting go of emotional upsets. In this country, it's promoted. Oh, I had one woman that came for a retreat. She was a public defender lawyer. After she did the retreat, she went back to work, and her boss came up to her one day and he said, you have to be more angry. You have to be tougher. So she's considering getting another job so she doesn't have to do that. But insisting, your boss coming insisting, you got to be angry. What is that? You got to be happy. And you'll learn how. As you practice the six R's and you recognize when your mind is distracted, it's pulled away from your object of meditation. You're thinking about this or that. It doesn't matter what you're thinking about. The content of your thoughts is not important. What you do with what arises is important. And this is where you make a choice. Now, there's a lot of spiritual practices that talk about free will and that sort of thing. And this is where your choice is. You can choose to identify with it and make yourself miserable, or you can let it be and become more happy. It's your choice. If you use the six R's, you will tend to be more and more happy as time goes by. As you become more familiar with how to do the six R's. Now, the six R's are six things that you have to do, not say, not repeat. And it turns into a flow. You recognize that your mind is distracted, you let it be, you relax, you smile, you come back to your object of meditation, stay there. So it's a flow. It's not rigidly, oh, I just recognize this. Now I have to release this. No, no, no. It's a flow. And you'll get so that it happens more and more easily all the time. I want it to become a habit for you all the time. I don't care if you're in a retreat or not. You have to be able to carry this with you into your daily life. Because you have hindrances arise in your daily life. I don't like this. Who doesn't like it? Who's taking it personally? Who's causing themselves suffering? Who's causing themselves their own pain? You can't blame something out there for your pain. Your pain is your pain. Why? Because you're taking it personally. This is me. This is mine. Well, why did this have to come up now? Now you start thinking about it and putting a story to it, causing yourself more pain. This practice is about change. Changing old bad habits into new good habits. What's the difference between a bad habit and a good habit? A bad habit is, this is me, this is mine, this is who I am. A good habit, well, it's just this. It's just this feeling. It's just these thoughts. They're not mine anyway, so why do I have to get involved with them? You have to take complete responsibility for your own attention. You have to remember to observe how your attention works. When you do that, you will start to see that it's part of a process. And the process works the same way all the time. As you start to see this process, you'll start to see how you start causing your own pain with your emotional dissatisfaction, dislike, and taking it personally. So you're going to learn how to recognize this, and you're going to teach it to yourself. And every hindrance that arises is your teacher. It's showing you exactly where some past action that you did comes up into the present. Now, what are you going to do with that? You're going to treat it like you always treat it and try to stuff it down and beat it away? That's what's being taught in a lot of meditation retreats. Or are you going to accept the fact that it's there and it's okay for it to be there? It has to be okay. Because it's the truth. When a hindrance arises, it's there. What are you going to do with the truth? You're going to fight with the truth? You're going to try to suppress the truth? You're going to try to change the truth so it's not quite the same? Or are you just going to let it go? Let it be. Everything about Buddhism is about doing this. It's not holding on to something, it's letting it be. Seeing it the way it truly is. Don't fight with the truth. Now there's a Pali word for this, it's Dhamma. Don't fight. fight the Dhamma. If you do, you can look forward to a lot of suffering. And that's okay. You can do that if you want. You can make yourself suffer all over the place. But it hurts. Yeah? Every time you fight with the truth, it hurts. So, what can you do with the truth? Let it be there. Relax into it. It's not you anyway. You didn't ask this stuff to come up. You can't make it go away. All you can do is allow it to be there. But it's painful. Okay. There's painful feeling, there's pleasant feeling. But I don't like painful feeling. Okay. Who doesn't like it? Who's trying to change it? Who's trying to make it different than it is? Who's so attached to having things be the same way that you're going to continue having this problem come up over and over and over again until you learn, hey, enough. Just let it be there. Relax into it. It's painful. Yeah, it's painful. Okay. But it's just pain, and it's not even my pain. I didn't sit here and say, you know, I have this emotional wound that I have, and I think it's time that I have it come up right now. Are you going to say that? Nobody's that crazy. It comes up because conditions are right for it to come up. What you do with that right now dictates what happens in the future. When you choose to use the 6R and let it be, and come back to your object to meditation with a smile, that hindrance becomes a little weaker. It takes two to tango. It takes two to fight. When you have a hindrance come up and I don't like it, now I'm going to try to make it different than it is, and it pushes back, and it gets stronger. And I'm going to push it back, and I'm determined to make this fear go away. Or the New Age ideas of just allow it to be there. Don't worry about it. It's nothing. Well, they are still suppressing. They're still pushing that fear away. You don't accept when you're taking it personally. You have to see that craving is the cause of suffering, and you have to relax and let that craving go. Now that hindrance, that fear, that anxiety, the dislike, whatever, it doesn't have anything to push against, and it gets weaker. It's not necessarily going to go away right away. You can't use the 6Rs as a stick to beat this thing from, stop it from coming back. It's going to come back as often as it needs to because of the strength of it. Now, what causes a hindrance to arise? Breaking a precept. Feel guilty. Saying something that's not necessarily true. Trying to fool the world with your speech. Cursing. Trying to divide people so that they're, oh, you're Muslim, I don't like you. I was in Indonesia, I had 4 Muslims come and do their retreat. And they were pretty successful with the retreat. And they said, well, I still believe in Allah. Fine, I don't care. Doesn't have anything to do with the meditation. eventually they'll see for themselves whether there's something to it or not. It's not my place to get them to change. They'll change on their own as they start seeing how this process works. So a hindrance can keep coming up over and over and over again, and you treat it in the same way every time. When your mind is distracted by this hindrance, let it be. Relax, smile, come back to your object of meditation. But I barely got back to the loving kindness, and there it is again. So, one thing that a lot of people get caught in is doing only half of the six R's. Ah, I recognize it. I release, relax, release, relax, release, relax. That doesn't work. You're right. It's not going to work. Why? Because you're only doing half of the six R's. It's not only recognizing that your mind is distracting and releasing that and relaxing, you have to bring up something that's wholesome. Why do I want you to smile all the time? It's wholesome. A secret. I know Buddhism doesn't have any secrets. Every time you smile, now smile, I mean smile in your mind, smile in your heart, little smile on your face, smile with your eyes. Every time you smile, you're practicing the entire Eightfold Path at that time. Every time you use the six R's, you're practicing the entire Eightfold Path at that time. Isn't that something? I'll get into the Eightfold Path later. This is supposed to be the introduction. But the whole point of meditating is not just to get calm and peaceful. The point of meditating is learning how to let go of craving and let go of the suffering that you cause yourself. Now, I said that there's two different kinds of meditation. About 95%, 96%, 98% of the people are practicing one-pointed concentration. And there's something that happens with one-pointed concentration. And that is, your mind is on your object of meditation, gets distracted. Your instructions are to release the distraction, immediately come back to your object of meditation. What are you doing when you do that? You're bringing the craving back to your object of meditation. When your meditation starts to get deep, the force of the meditation suppresses the hindrances. So for that period of time, your mind is pretty pure. You can get into a very blissful state. You can get into a very peaceful, calm state, and it's great while you're in it. But when you get out of it and you lose that concentration, you still have the hindrances, and they're bigger and stronger because you've been pushing them down with the concentration. And it's not that you're doing it on purpose. That's just the nature of the concentration. Now, what I'm showing you right now has one extra step in it. One extra step. And it stops your mind from being one-pointed on something And that is the relaxed step. When you use the relaxed step, what it does for your mind is it opens it up. And you start seeing more clearly how this process actually works. And this process is called dependent arising, dependent origination. You're going to hear a lot about that on this retreat. This is exactly how mind works. And you're going to be teaching yourself how. Because your mindfulness is remembering to observe how mind's attention moves. So you're going to start seeing, as you start going deeper in your meditation, you're going to start seeing more and more clearly how this process works. And you're seeing it very clearly that there's no me, there's no my in this. It's just a process. So the definition I gave you for mindfulness, what I'm actually telling you to do is go deeper and see how the process works instead of worry about why this feeling came up. When you start thinking about why this depression came up, why this fear came up, why this anxiety, why this dislike, why it comes up is because conditions are right for it to come up. Then it's going to come up by itself. But it's not yours. It's just a feeling. In this retreat, I want you to do three things. I want you to smile. All the time, smile. I want you to laugh with yourself for getting caught by hindrances. And I want you to have fun. You ever hear a meditation teacher tell you that? Or a meditation guide? No. Oh, this is serious stuff. And you go into meditation retreats where they're teaching one-pointed concentration and you see their faces are all screwed up. They're really trying hard. They're putting out a lot of energy and a lot of effort. And they do get into peace and calm. There is advantage to having good concentration, but the end result of one-pointed concentration is not the same as what the Buddha taught. He tried one-pointed concentration. He went as far as you can possibly go with one-pointed concentration. And he said, that doesn't work. I mean, he went so far that the people that were teaching him, one of the teachers said, now I want you to sit beside me and teach with me. And he said, nah, there's something missing here. So he went to another teacher. And he got deeper in the meditation. He got into the realm of neither perception nor non-perception. Brilliant state of mind, really good. His teacher had not gone that far. He took over from his father. His father had gone that far. So he comes to the Buddha after the Buddha said, this is what the experience is, right? And he goes, yeah, that's it. Why don't you take over and teach everyone how to do this? And the Buddha said, no, there's still something missing. So he had to go off on his own and experiment. And some of the things that he did, he tried the practices of the day with one-pointed concentration. He was doing all kinds of weird things. I won't go into it right now, but he did some disgusting things. Eating his own excrement, things like that, because that leads to nibbana. But when he started thinking about how this process works and how you need to relax and let go of that subtle tension and tightness in your head, in your mind. Now everything starts falling into place. It's not that the other practices that he did were bad. They're not bad. One point of concentration could be very useful at times. But the end result isn't Nibbana. And that's what the Buddha was interested in. How do we cool this fire? How do we let go of this pain and suffering? He saw going around the wheel in samsara, well, sometimes you have a good rebirth, sometimes you don't, depending on your actions. He said, well, there's got to be a way of getting off this wheel. And having the supreme coolness all the time. That's what I'm going to show you. I have a lot of students that are very, very successful in meditation. Sometimes it happens in one retreat, sometimes it happens in two. I've had some students that for years they didn't follow the directions precisely, and they weren't so successful with the meditation until they finally, after 3 years of saying, don't do that. That's not the way. Stay with your object of meditation. Don't get involved in looking for the cause of this or the cause of that. I have one student, 7 years I had him practice with me. And finally, after 7 years, and he was doing more than one retreat a year, he was doing two or three, he finally heard what I said. And he started doing it. And very quickly, he's experienced Nibbana. But it took 7 years of hard work on my part. And I don't want to do that. I want you to pay attention and do it the way I'm showing you right now. Have fun. Don't get serious with mental states. Laugh with your mental states. It's not yours anyway. You can be sitting there and all of a sudden sadness comes. Well, did you tell yourself to be sad? No. It happened because conditions are right. Can you laugh with your mind for being so crazy, for bringing this up? Well, when you do, and you, it doesn't have to be a big belly laugh, but kind of a chuckle in your mind. Oh, look at what my mind's doing now. It goes from, I am that, I am the fear, I am the anxiety, I am whatever that emotional state is, to it's only that. It's only this feeling. Now, do I want to walk around with this anger all the time for the rest of the day? No, let's just let it go. Laughter about yourself changes your perspective. And that perspective is letting go of the craving. I am that to it's only that. That's letting go of the craving. So when you let go of the craving, it's not yours anyway, it's just a feeling. Let that one be. Have fun with the retreat. have fun at how crazy your mind is. Welcome to the human race. We're all crazy. And it's okay to be crazy. But you don't have to continue being crazy. You can let go of those emotional states. You can let go of these kind of distractions. Now, every hindrance I call a distraction, because that's basically what it is. It's just pulling you away from your object of meditation. So have fun with it. This is your best friend. This is your teacher. It's showing you where some past actions happen. It causes guilty feeling to come up. And now it comes up again. Okay, but I don't have to fight it. I don't have to try to push it away. I don't have to make it any different than it is. All I have to do is laugh and let it be there. Oh, the mind's crazy again. Slow learner. Have fun. So, I want you to sit for no less than 30 minutes. Somebody asked me, okay, how long can I sit? I had a student, he'd done a retreat with me once before, very successful. His first sitting was 15 hours. Without moving his body. So, okay. You can sit, for this retreat, don't sit more than 2 days without moving. That's enough. But don't sit less than 30 minutes. When your sitting is good, sit longer. Every sitting is going to be different. Don't try to make one sitting that was real good and the next sitting try to be the same. It's not gonna be. You have to put in less energy, less trying. As a matter of fact, that we'll call trying a four-letter word. We don't try, ever. Either you're going to do it or you don't do it. If you say, I'm going to try, that's leaving yourself open for quitting. Say you're going to do it, then do it. This is a simple practice. It's very simple. It's not always easy. But you have to understand that the Buddha was teaching mostly farmers that were uneducated. And they had to have a practice that worked and worked well and worked quickly. Otherwise, he wouldn't be as famous as he is now. So this practice, if you follow the directions, you keep your smile going all the time. You laugh with your craziness and have fun. Your progress is going to be fast. I promise, it's fast. And you're going to really learn a lot very quickly. So the more you let go of, well, I used to do this in meditation, maybe I'll try that with what I'm doing now. That doesn't work. You have to let go of all the other practices. You don't know what's going to happen next, so don't try to project it. And follow the 6 hours. Have fun. Sit as long as you're comfortable. And when you get to certain points in your meditation, I might suggest that you sit longer. because you're ready for it. But this is a natural process. Things happen naturally by themselves. I told you that this is the Brahma Viharas. You'll go from metta to karuna to mudita to upekkha, and it can happen all in one sitting. Not necessarily. Depends on you. I had somebody come up to me the last retreat I just gave, and this lady, she said, "You're pushing me to go too fast." I was shocked. I said, "I'm not pushing you. I'm telling you what's happening. Your mind is going that fast. It's not me that's pushing you. I don't care whether you go that fast or not. But your mind is ready, so it changes. It happens by itself." So she stopped accusing me after that. I know how fast you can progress with the meditation. But the way you start to see for yourself, that's what the real meditation is about. And it's not about the progress. It's the change that you're willing to go through. The things that you're willing to not fight with. And relax into. So, before you go to sleep at night, there's two things I want you to do. I want you to make a determination what time you're going to wake up in the morning. And don't make it always 5 o'clock. Make it 4:59, 5:01, change it around a little bit. And try to hit that. If you don't, okay, you don't, no big deal. The reason I want you to start now is because that is a good way to start getting your determinations more accurate. It's a way of setting your body clock. When you start going deeper in your meditation, it becomes very useful. Also, I want you to make a determination right before you go to sleep that you're going to wake up smiling and happy. And when you wake up smiling and happy, keep it going. Okay? It's simple. Smile. A lot of people will come to me first part of the retreat. "Oh, my mind is so active. I can't do this. I can't do that." What's my thoughts about that? You're not smiling enough. See, when you smile, it improves your mindfulness. It improves your observation power of how this process works. Because it's real easy to see when your mind's not smiling and how you get caught in the mud with your attachments. So the more you smile, the more uplifted your mind is, you'll start to have joy arise. And joy is a very necessary part of this practice. Have fun. Be joyful. When you have joy in your mind is very alert, your mind is very quickly to observe when a distraction starts to come up. So it improves your mindfulness. And you're able to notice how these changes start to happen for you and how your mind becomes more uplifted. have fun. Don't want to see frowns. Only want to see happy faces. Every time I go to Indonesia, they give me a different kind of happy face. Last year, they gave me a happy face on my toast. It's the darndest thing I've ever seen. I have a smiling toast at me. Wow, that's really something. But that's just the reminder. Remind yourself often to keep your smile going. And the smile in your mind, it's not necessarily always going to be on your lips, but it's a smile in your mind, it's a smile in your heart. That's the key. But to start off with, I want you smiling with your face. Okay? So, you get up. The first sitting starts with the morning service that David's going to give at 5:30. Don't be late. No excuses for being late. Be here before 5:30. After the morning service, then you start doing your loving kindness meditation. Either walking or sitting, it's up to you. And then, 7 o'clock, breakfast. After breakfast, you'll have some time to brush your teeth, and there's going to be some jobs around here that are, you need to carry your meditation with you while you're doing the jobs. It might be cleaning up in here, or sweeping somewhere, or doing something like that. But that's not a time to break and just start letting your mind go do whatever it's going to do. It's a time to learn how to carry your meditation with you while you're doing activities. After that, then sitting and walking until 11 o'clock. After you get done eating, go take rest. The first sitting is at 1 o'clock after lunch? Okay. So you'll have a good long stretch where you can have 4 or 5 hours of practice straight. Now, for the people that are used to sitting longer, people have done the practice before, if you hear the bell for lunch but your practice is going good, continue sitting until it's time to get up. In the precepts, we change some words around, and instead of no solid food after 12 o'clock, it's after the noonday meal. So if your sitting is good, keep on sitting. Don't break just because of food. If you are lay down and you start sleeping and you wake up, get up in the bed and continue sitting for a little while. If you want to go back to sleep, go back to sleep. But some of the best meditation time is between 2 and 5 o'clock because it's very quiet psychically. As a matter of fact, I got up at 3 o'clock this morning and started sitting. And it was, I like that time. It's really nice. You can take naps during the day if you get up and sit for 2 or 3 hours in the after a meal you feel like, I need to take a nap. Okay, you can. 15 minutes is a good cat nap. A half an hour, no more. Noble silence is your friend. I don't want you talking. If I catch you talking, I will give you a warning. If I catch you a second time, I'll give you a more stern warning. If I catch you a third time, I'll ask you to leave. That's how important it is now. Why? Because when you talk to somebody else, you're disturbing their meditation too. And what do you think about when you walk away from talking? What you talked about. That's a distraction, isn't it? Keep your meditation going. Be silent, please. It is important. You will have better progress with your practice when you don't speak. So about 5:30, there's tea time if you want to take a break, but that doesn't mean a break from your meditation. It means you're going to get some tea and drink it. Don't talk. Stay with your meditation object all the time. 6 o'clock, Dhamma talk. After the Dhamma talk, it's a good idea to get up and move around. But don't talk. It's not break time. It's meditation time. Get your blood moving again. Get some circulation going. Then come back in and sit and walk until 10 o'clock. Don't go to bed before then. When I was in Burma, I started out going to bed at 11 o'clock, getting up at 3 o'clock. All the rest of the time was meditation. That means meditation while I was taking a shower, while I was eating, all I was really serious with it. And the teacher asked me one day, how much sleep are you taking? I said, go to bed at 3 o'clock, get up at, or go to bed at 11 o'clock, get up at 3 o'clock. Why are you sleeping so much? I said, okay. So I cut it down. I went to bed at midnight, got up at 2 o'clock. I did that for 3 months. I'm giving you 7 hours. This is a walk in the park. I mean, this is really easy. Don't go to bed before 10 o'clock. You get 7 hours, 10 to 5. You get an hour after lunch, or even an hour, an hour or so. So you're getting almost 8 hours sleep. I did for 3 months, 2. No naps. I don't recommend it. That's why I don't push you to do it. I want you to be rested. You'll get to be at certain places in the meditation where you don't feel like you need so much sleep. Then don't take so much sleep. If you get up in the middle of the night, try sitting. If it doesn't work, then go back to sleep. It's no big deal. You don't have to beat yourself up because you didn't sit more than 15 minutes. Your body needs the rest. Okay, fine. I don't want you sleeping over much. Now, when I say you can take a cat nap, I mean if you get up in the middle of the night and you wind up sitting for an hour, 2 hours, in the afternoon you might start to feel a little drowsy, you can take a nap, but short nap, not long. And one of the things that always happened to me when I was in Burma was right around 2 o'clock, I always had sloth and torpor. So in order to overcome the sloth and torpor, that was my time to take a shower. Woke me up real good, because they didn't have hot water. But it did wake me up real well. So you can overcome the sloth and torpor by washing your face. The sloth and torpor occurs because you're not keeping your attention closely enough to your object of meditation. You start having these little thoughts come in, and you kind of pay attention to those while you're radiating some loving kindness to your friend. And then they start getting a little bit bigger, and then you start getting kind of dreamy, and you're not with your object of meditation anymore. And then your back starts slumping, and then you start nodding. When sloth and torpor comes, there's a couple things that you can do. One, sit almost uncomfortably straight. Not to cause a lot of pain, but just more than normal. Then when the sloth and torpor comes in and you start noticing your back starting to do that, you'll catch it more quickly and you can straighten up and you'll overcome the sloth and torpor fairly quickly. Another way is choose your walking area back and forth. Walk forwards to the end of your walking area. Don't turn around, walk backwards. To the end of your walking area, then walk forwards. But stay with your object of meditation the whole time. Those two things will be most helpful for you with sloth and torpor. If it gets so bad that you can't stand it, go take a quick cat nap, 10 or 15 minutes. That's it. It's amazing how much brighter your mind becomes with a little cat nap. Okay? So, I expect a lot of people to be very successful on this retreat. I demand it. You're doing all the work. How can I demand it? Have fun. Quietly. Okay? Do you have any questions? You have sleep cycles, and 15 minutes is a quarter of one of those cycles, and it's perfect. You wake up and your mind is really alert, and you don't have the grogginess. If you go through a whole sleep cycle, then you'll wake up and be alert, but if you do it for 20 minutes, then you'll wake up groggy. 15 seems to be real good. 30 seems to be real good. So don't do any more than that.
On the recognize, I think I've been getting it wrong, so I want to check this with you. I think what you said earlier was that recognize that you have drifted.
Right.
Not recognize what you have drifted to.
No.
Okay.
It's just you're not on your object of meditation anymore. So you recognize that you're distracted. Release it, relax, smile, come back. And do it. Don't say it. Okay? Yeah?
Do you work with the same spiritual friend the entire time?
Until I tell you to change. Yes. Now, if you've done the meditation before and you started doing in the six directions, I want you to start with loving kindness in the six directions. You'll understand what I'm saying when I say that. People that are just starting out won't. So. Hi, Eileen. I'm happy to see you. Anything else? Yes. Comfortable. Don't lean too heavily with your back. If you feel like sitting on the floor, you can sit on the floor. It doesn't matter. But generally, especially in this country, we're not raised to sit on the floor. And you try to sit on the floor and you wind up with your legs going to sleep and a lot of pain happening, and you don't need that. Sit comfortably. If you want to sit on the floor, you can. But I don't recommend it every time. Sometimes sit on a chair, because that way it relieves your legs and muscles if you're not used to sitting all the time. Okay? And let's share some more. May suffering ones be suffering free, and the fear struck fearless be. May the grieving shed all grief, and may all beings find relief. May all beings share this merit that we have thus acquired for the acquisition of all kinds of happiness. May beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share this merit of ours. May they long protect the Buddha's dispensations. Sadhu, sadhu.